I'm Fraser Kane. You're listening to the audio edition of Universe Today. In the past, astronomers could only see the sky in visible light, using their eyes as receptors. New technologies extended their vision into different spectrums: infrared, ultraviolet, radio waves, X-rays, and gamma rays. But what if you had gravity eyes? Einstein predicted that the most extreme objects and events in the universe should generate gravity waves and distort the space around them. A new experiment called the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, or LIGO, could make the first detection of these gravity waves. Dr. Sam Waldman joins me from the LIGO Laboratory. Hi, Sam. Welcome to Universe Today.
Hi. Thank you very much for inviting me.
All right. So what is a gravity wave?
Well, so a gravity wave can be explained pretty simply if you remember that mass distorts space-time. So if you remember the analogy of a sheet pulled taut and a bowling ball tossed into the middle of the sheet, bending the sheet, where the bowling ball is a mass and the sheet represents space-time. If you move that bowling ball back and forth very rapidly, you'll make ripples in the sheet. And the same thing is true for masses in our universe. If you move a star back and forth very rapidly, you will make ripples in space-time. And those ripples in space-time are observable. We call them gravity waves.
Right. Now, if I'm walking around the room or, is that going to cause gravity waves?
Well, it will. As far as we know, gravity works at all length scales and for all masses. But space-time is very stiff. So something like my 200-pound self moving through my office will not cause gravity waves. What are required are extremely massive objects moving very rapidly. So when we look to detect gravity waves, we are looking for solar mass scale objects. In particular, we search for neutron stars, which are between 1.5 and 3 solar masses. We look for black holes up to several hundred solar masses. And we look for these objects to be moving very rapidly. So when we talk about a neutron star, we're talking about a neutron star moving at almost the speed of light. And in fact, it has to be vibrating at the speed of light. It can't just be moving. It has to be shaking back and forth very rapidly. So they're very unique but very massive cataclysmic systems that we're searching for.
Now, gravity waves are purely theoretical, right? They were predicted by Einstein, but they haven't been seen yet?
They have not been observed. They've been inferred. There is a pulsar system whose frequency is spinning down at a rate consistent with emission of gravity waves. That's the PSR 1913 plus 16. And that's that the orbit of this star is changing. That's an inference, but of course it's not an observation directly of gravity waves. It's pretty clean that they have to exist. If Einstein's laws exist, if general relativity works, and it works very well on very many length scales, then gravity waves exist too. They're just very difficult to see.
What's it going to take to be able to detect them? I mean, it sounds like they're fairly cataclysmic events, you know, great big black holes and neutron stars moving around. Why are they so difficult to find?
Well, there's two components to that. One thing is that, black holes don't collide all the time, and neutron stars don't shake about in, just any old place. So the number of events that can cause observable gravity waves is actually fairly small. And we talk about, for instance, in the Milky Way galaxy, one event occurring every 30 or 50 years. But the other part of that equation is that the gravity waves are gravity waves themselves are very small. So they introduce what we call a strain. That's a length change per unit length. So, for instance, if I have a yardstick 1 meter long, then a gravity wave will squish that yardstick as it comes through. But the level it will squish that yardstick is extremely small. If I have a 1 meter yardstick, it will only induce a change of 10 to the minus 21 meters. So it's a very, very small change. And, of course, observing 10 to the minus 21 meters is where the large challenge is in observing a gravity wave.
But wouldn't you, trying to measure the change of your yardstick with another yardstick, that other yardstick would also be changing? So I could see that being difficult to do.
Exactly. And so you have a problem. There's two problems. And Well, the way we solve the yardstick, measuring a yardstick problem, is that we actually have two yardsticks, and we form them into an L. And the way we measure them is using a laser. And the way we have arranged our yardsticks is actually in a 4 kilometer long L. So there's two arms, each one's 4 kilometers long. And at the end of each arm is a 10 kilogram quartz test mass that we bounce lasers off of. And when a gravity wave comes through this L-shaped detector, it stretches one leg while it shrinks the other leg. And it does this at say, 100 hertz, at audio frequencies. So if you could listen to the motion of these masses, you'd hear a buzzing at 100 hertz. And so what we measure with our laser is the differential arm length of this large L-shaped interferometer. That's why it's LIGO. It's the Laser Interferometer Gravity Observatory.
So let's see if I understand this correctly. So say billions of years ago, a black hole collides with another and generates a bunch of gravity waves, and those gravity waves sort of cross the universe and they wash past the Earth. And as they go past the Earth, they are lengthening one of these arms and they're shrinking the other one, and you can detect that change by this laser bouncing back and forth.
That's right. That's exactly right. And in the and as I said, though, the challenge, of course, is that length change is extremely small. In the case of our 4 kilometer mirrors, in the case of our 4 kilometer interferometers, the length change that we measure right now is 10 to the minus 19 meters. And to put a scale on that, the diameter of an atomic nucleus is only 10 to the minus 15 meters. So in fact, our sensitivity is subatomic, if you'd like.
And so what kinds of events should you be able to detect with the detector at this point?
Well, so that's actually a fascinating area. The analogy we like to use is it's like looking at the universe with radio waves was to looking at the universe with telescopes, with optical telescopes. The things you see are totally different. You're sensitive to a totally different regime of the universe. And in particular, LIGO is sensitive to, as I said, these cataclysmic events. So we classify our events into four broad categories. The first one we call bursts, and that is something like a black hole forming. So a supernova explosion occurs, and so much matter moves so rapidly that it forms black holes, but you don't know what the black holes look like, what the gravity waves look like. All you know is that there are gravity waves. So these are things that happen extremely rapidly. They last for 100 milliseconds at the most. And they come about from the formation of black holes, as I said. Another event that we look at is when two objects are in orbit with each other, say two neutron stars orbit each other, and eventually those orbits, the diameter of the orbit decays, and the neutron stars will coalesce. They will fall into each other and form a black hole. And the very last few orbits, those neutron stars, which, keep in mind, are objects that weigh 1.4 to, say, 3 solar masses, these objects are moving at large fractions of the speed of light, say up, 10% to 20% of the speed of light. And that motion is a very efficient generator of gravity waves. So that's what we use as our standard candle. That's what we think that we know exist. We know they're out there, but we are not sure how many of them are going off at any one time, We're not sure what a neutron star in spiral looks like in radio waves, what it looks like in X-rays, what it looks like in optical radiation. So it's a little bit difficult to calculate exactly how often you'll see either an in spiral or a supernova going off.
Now, will you be able to detect their direction?
So we have two interferometers. In fact, we have two sites and three interferometers. One interferometer is in Livingston, Louisiana, which is just north of New Orleans, And our other interferometer is in Washington State, in eastern Washington State. And because we have two interferometers, we can do triangulation on the sky. But there is some uncertainty left in where exactly the source is. There are other collaborations in the world that we work with very closely in Germany and Italy and Japan, and they also have detectors. So if multiple detectors in multiple sites see a gravity wave, then we can do a very good job of localizing. Hope is that we see a gravity wave, we know where it comes from, and then we tell our radio astronomer colleagues and our X-ray astronomer colleagues and our optical astronomer colleagues to go look at that portion of the sky.
Now, there's some large new telescopes on the horizon, you know, overwhelmingly large and gigantically large, and the Magellan and the big telescopes that are coming down the pipe with fairly large budgets being spent. Let's say that, you know, you can reliably find gravity waves, and it's almost like it adds a new spectrum to our detection. If large budgets were put into some of these gravity wave detectors, what do you think down the road they could be used for?
Well, as I said before, it's like the revolution in astronomy when radio telescopes first came online, looking at a fundamentally different class of phenomenon. And I should say that the LIGO laboratory is a fairly large laboratory. We are over 150 scientists working on these, and so it's a large collaboration, and we hope to collaborate with all of the optical and radio astronomers as we go forwards. But it's a little bit difficult to predict what path that science will take. I think if you speak to a lot of gravity waves, or to a lot of general relativists, the most exciting feature of gravity waves is that we're doing what's called strong field general relativity. That is, all the general relativity you can measure looking at stars and looking at galaxies is very weak. There's not a lot of mass involved. It's not moving very fast. It's at very large distances. Whereas when we're talking about the collision of a black hole and a neutron star, that very last bit when that neutron star falls into the black hole is extremely violent. And probes a realm of general relativity that just isn't accessible with normal telescopes, with radio, with X-ray. And so the hope is that there's some really fundamentally new and exciting physics there. I think that's what primarily motivates the field is really, you could call it fun with general relativity.
And so when will you have, or when do you hope to have your first detection?
Well, so the LIGO interferometers, all three interferometers that LIGO operates, are running at design sensitivity. And we are currently in the middle of what we call our S5 run. That's our fifth science run, which is a year-long run where all we do for a year is try to look for gravity waves. As with everything else in astronomy, a lot of it is a wait and see. You know, if a supernova doesn't explode, then we're not going to see it, of course. And so we have to be online for as long as possible. And then after S5 is over, we will, and the probability for observing, for instance, an in-spiral event or a supernova event is thought to be in the region of, at our current sensitivity, it's thought that we're going to see one once every 10 to 20 years or so. So there's a large range. In the literature, there are folks who claim that we will see multiple per year, and then there are folks who claim that we won't see one ever at our current sensitivity. And the conservative middle ground is once every 10 years. So On the other hand, we are upgrading our detectors as soon as this run is over, and we're improving the sensitivity by a factor of 2, which would increase our detection rate by a factor of 2 cubed, because our sensitivity is a radius, and we're probing a volume in space. And so with that factor of 8 or 10 in detection rate, we should be seeing an event once every year or so. And then after that, we are upgrading to what's called advanced LIGO, which is a factor of 10 improvement in sensitivity, in which case we will almost definitely be seeing gravity waves once every day or so.
Wow. Every
2 to 3 days. And so in that instrument is designed to be a very real tool. You know, we want to do gravity astronomy. We want to be seeing events every few days. It'll be like launching the Swift satellite. As soon as Swift went up, you start seeing gamma ray bursts all the time. And advanced LIGO will be similar.
Well, that's great. It sounds like you're going to be very busy.
It's an exciting time.
Well, Dr. Waldman, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Fraser.
Dr. Sam Waldman is a postdoctoral scholar at the LIGO Laboratory at Caltech. He spoke to me from Pasadena, California. Now, you can get more space and astronomy news by visiting my website at universetoday.com. You can send me any comments, questions, or feedback to info@universetoday.com. Thanks for listening.